From the authentic soul of Bernie Siegel, MD, comes Mind Health Matters, a show that reflects Bernie's passion to reach people struggling with all of life's challenges, not just the physical ones, so that each person can live life fully with the understanding that, as Bernie reminds us, we only have today. Believing that we are all here to love one another, each in our own unique way, Bernie has crafted eternal truths and the timeless wisdom of the ages. Join Bernie as he shares his powerful journey through life while offering us special nuggets of his sacred wisdom.
Welcome, everyone. I'm Deborah Beauvais, and yes, you're with Dr. Bernie Siegel, Lionel Ketchian, and myself, moi, as our radioactive family here. This is a Dream Vision 7 radio broadcast here at 1510 AM WUFC Boston. Bernie's show is heard every first Sunday at 8 p.m. Eastern Time here, and then you can catch his show Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday on our own station, Dream Visions, the number 7 radio.com, 12 p.m. and 12 a.m. Eastern Time, those 3 days. Well, we have a great show for you today, and as the intro says, Bernie is filled with stories and wisdom for all of us, and it just is, I think, you're eternal, Bernie, with your messages. They'll go on for thousands of years. So today we're going to talk about grief, tears, loss, and wounds, which affects just about every single human being in the universe. So welcome, guys, Bernie, Dr. Bernie, and Lionel.
Thank you.
Well, Deborah, I just want to ask, are you referring to when Bernie dies 2,000 years after he's dead? Is that what you're saying?
Well, yes. I mean, it's now and then. I mean, imagine thousands of years from now, people reading about Bernie's wisdom, and it still soothes and helps them. I really believe that.
I agree. I was just using the word dead and has, you know, died, instead of using all of the other words that we've come up with for death, because as we were talking before the show started, and I'm sure Bernie will lead off with this, we seem to just skirt the idea of death. We don't want to talk about it. We don't want to say somebody died or will die. And we come up with all kinds of answers to, not deal with and face the issue that life is also about death.
Right. Yeah. We are eternal, and yet we've got other things to do besides living on Earth.
Yeah. What's immortal is our consciousness and our love. I don't know if I've mentioned this story to the two of you, but I was working in a nursing home over 10 years ago and, doing groups with the residents and helping them out because I think my in-laws were there for a time at this nursing home. And there was one fellow there named Bill who was always walking the hall, smiling, helping everybody. And he was a resident. And then I hadn't been there for about 10 years and came back because, again, somebody I know was there, and I went to visit, and I walked in, and there's a picture, a photograph of Bill hanging in the library of this nursing home, and it's the only photograph on the wall. And I walked past the room. I said, oh, there's Bill. And the man managing it said, what are you talking about? How do you know him? You haven't been there in 10 years. I said, I know, but I said, 10 years ago, I was working with everybody here, and he was teaching everybody something. And I said, I'll have to bring you a picture. Because what I did with all the residents was say, draw yourself today and 25 years ago. And everybody handed me two pictures. 25 years ago, I have hair, I'm smiling, I'm slim. Today, I'm fat, unhappy, and bald. And Bill handed me one picture, one smiling face. I said, Bill, I asked for two. He said, look what it says on the page. And in the margin, he wrote, that's me then. That's me now.
That's great.
And that's why I said that, here he is, the only resident of that nursing home who's basically immortalized. And his photograph is there of his smiling face. He's still with everybody. And I'd say to people, remember that. I mean, there's so many books and poets Love is immortal and makes all things immortal, while hate dies in every minute. The best part of a good man stays forever. You'll see him in the streets and the houses, all the things that are here out of love and for love. You know, the body may be taken away, but the best part stays. And, it goes on and on, you know, depending on, I guess Thornton Wilder. And we ourselves shall be loved for a while and forgotten, but the love will have been enough. All those impulses of love return to the love that made them. Even memory is not necessary for love. There's a land of the living and a land of the dead, and the bridge is love, the only survival, the only meaning. And you know that, once I get going, I never stop talking. But, but you know, what it brings up is the whole point. It comes from, that's the end of the book, The Bridge of San Luis Rey.
All right.
See, you are walking across a bridge, it breaks, and the five or six people that were on it are all dead. Why the hell were they there at that moment? You know, or 9/11. Why did some people stop to pick up the laundry and were late to work and they're alive today? Or they dropped their kid off at school, which you don't normally do, and they're late to work and they're alive today.
Mm.
And a priest in the book, you know, wants to know, it's almost like the guilt issue. You know, what did they do wrong so God had them on the bridge? And
yeah.
He learns in the end it's not about that. But there are a hell of a lot of clergy who will tell you, you see, when life is wonderful and everything's going well, you forget about God.
Mm.
So what happens? You know, I'll give you, you know, a disease. I'll have you fall off a bridge.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
We'll get you back here. Now, I don't believe that. I mean, in the sense that God would do that to people. But let me read you a couple of poems, then we can get back, that I've written years ago. One is called The Great Teacher. Death, what a great teacher you are. Yet few of us elect to take your class and learn about life. That is the essence of death's teaching. Death is not an elective. We must all take the class. The wise students audit the class in their early years and find enlightenment. They are prepared when graduation day comes. It is your commencement. And
you know, are you done with that poem, Bernie? Because I want to remind you of something you had said many years ago, and I know it's in writing, but I found it to be very profound. And your words are, death is not a failure. That, when I first heard that statement from you or read it, I was very taken with that because, you know, a lot of times, and I'm sure as a doctor, you're trying to do everything you can to save a patient, but sometimes you forget that, you know, some things are out of your hands, and death is not a failure. And you came up with that phrase, and I really can't hear enough about that because I think that's a very profound statement.
Yeah, and yet in the newspapers, what do we read every day? You know,
sure.
So-and-so fails. You know,
right.
It's like you lost your battle, see?
Right.
The disease is better and stronger than you are. I mean, that just drives me nuts when they talk like that. You know, the dying is not a failure, as you said. And that's part of why I bring this up, that what I have found is that when you have lived fully, have the love of your family and the support, then it's not hard to die either. Because when you get tired of your body, you get out of here. You turn the switch off, is the way I often put it.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, that's what people forget, and doctors don't get trained to help people die. You know, think of all the assisted, you know, not assisted living, but assisted dying.
Suicide,
Assisted suicide, and how that becomes a conflict. We shouldn't need anybody. I mean, literally, anybody listening, you want to be dead, stop eating and drinking. You'll be dead in a few weeks, you know?
That's true.
But that's a hard way to go.
Well, you can have a sip now and then, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But if you deprive yourself, your body will shut down.
Right.
And it's amazing. I mean, in my family, my father-in-law, who was quadriplegic and aged 97, and you see, here's the trouble with family. I was encouraging him to live to be 100 so I could get him on television, you know, and celebrate all that he had done.
Mm-hmm.
And one night when I say we, wife, daughter, and myself are, you know, giving him dinner and his vitamins, he said, no, not tonight. And I knew he was telling us, I'm done. And he died that night. Now you'd say, how the hell did he manage that? He wasn't, you know, he didn't have anything wrong that day that wasn't there a month before or a year before. It was just him. And he just said, that's it. And at in hospitals, most people die in the middle of the night. Why? Because the doctor isn't there to stop you. And your family isn't there to make you feel guilty or to cause them pain. I mean, there was one doctor who wrote an article, and I admired him. In the intensive care unit, the doctors are on eight-hour shifts. And what they were doing with this very sick man was challenging each other. Say, hey, not on my shift. See, when the next guy would come on, look, he's still alive. Didn't die on my shift. And then this fellow realized, what are we doing to this man? You know, we're keeping him from being dead, but he's not enjoying life. They're just showing off what kind of doctors they are. So he wrote an article entitled, Not on My Shift, and he let him die rather than prolong his dying because he wasn't
right. Well, Bernie, that's living. A perfect example of death is not a failure. And once doctors understood that more, they got the message that there's a separation between the two thoughts, death and failure. They're not associated. You know, we've always thought of death as a failure.
Well, one more story, I mean, that really happened to me. A friend of mine had leukemia, was in the hospital. He was dying. I knew that, and I was visiting him. And I'd come up to his floor one day, and his room was empty, nobody in the bed. I said to the secretary, Alan died. She said, no. He Brady'd. I said, excuse me, he's dead? No, he Brady'd. Now, you don't know what she's saying, but I do. Guess what the name of the building is where the morgue is?
Brady.
Yeah, Brady Building.
Oh.
And I thought, I mean, how sick can we get that we don't, you know, you don't die at Yale, you Brady. I mean, it was just such a denial of everything. And we have to stop denying because, let me read you one more of my death poems. It's entitled Death. I die a little each day. One dies many times in a lifetime before the liberating death. The many deaths are the events which plunge us into darkness. A difficult time and journey until we enter the rebirth canal and climb back into the light to be born again. It gets harder to do the larger our ego gets. And the more we accumulate. But each death brings an opportunity for our rebirth if we have the courage. Dying is easy. Living can be difficult and painful. One day there will be a gift for us all, death. Until then, I will keep crawling to the light each time I die. And something I was reading.
You know, that's beautiful. And Bernie, going back to your statement of death is not a failure, what I think that teaches us is when we can separate death, you know, the reality of death from the understanding of fear, you know, because the two are so associated, fear and death. And I think that's why failure and fear, you know, play this part where it prevents us from really experiencing life. And I think it's a true statement that if you don't truly embrace your death, you're really avoiding life.
Yes.
True. And let's can we get back to, I'd like to hear Bernie and Lionel, your perspective on assisted suicide.
Well, let me give you a specific example as a doctor. Because I remember reading about the Schiavo case down in Florida. Here's a woman who's brain dead. Her husband wants to let her die. She has a feeding tube in. And, of course, the lawyers are, oh, you're murdering her. If you stop feeding her, pull the tube out. Well, I got a call from a doctor who said my mother has been brain dead for 2 years, and we want to let her die. Hospice says that they won't, you know, take the tube out, that we're murdering her. I said, look, I'll pull the tube out. Then when you show up at hospice, she doesn't have a tube. So I pulled her feeding tube out. And I said, okay, go ahead and take her now. And you can say you didn't pull it out. They showed up at hospice, and the attorney showed up and said, no, no, we won't take her. You're murdering her. So I said, bring her back to the hospital. I'll admit her. And we put her in the hospital. And after the office that day, I came over, and the family was around the bed. And I said to them, look, tell your mother that her love will stay with you. It's okay for her to go. It's okay for her to die. Let her know. And they all started crying, and, you know, we can't say it. I said, all right, I'm going to speak for you. And I went, and I stood next to the bed, and I said, your family is standing around the bed. They love you. Your love will stay with them. They want you to know it's okay for you to go because your love will always be here with them. She died 15 minutes later. Mm. Now, that's with IV running. You know what I mean? Nothing was stopped. I mean, her care was the same. But 15 minutes later, she just turned everything off. Mm. And that's the part I keep letting people know, that you can tell people it's okay to go. Well, let me tell you a funny story about death. You'd say, funny? Yeah. You see, after that story I told you, I mean, this couple was reading some things I had written. The mother-in-law was in a nursing home, debilitated, quite sick, and they thought, okay, we have to go and tell Mama that it's okay for her to go, you know, now that we've read Siegel's article. They get in the car. They drive for an hour and a half. They get to the nursing home. They go to her room. They stand around the bed. They say, Mom, your love will stay with you. We want you to know that if you need to go, it's okay. What do you think happened?
She opens her eyes and says, I'm not going anywhere.
That's exactly what happened.
Good guess.
And they burst out laughing and drove home free. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Now
yeah.
they didn't have that burden. See, are we doing the wrong thing? You know, is she suffering?
Yeah.
And I'd say that's what we just need to do is communicate it. I used to, with my father-in-law, who, you know, as I said, finally died. See, another simple way of knowing somebody's ready, you're placed in a totally white room. I mean, there are no windows. It's just a white room. Everything is white, the walls, ceiling. And, you know, I give you a chair. I say, sit down. And then I ask you, how do you feel in that white room all alone? Now, if you're exhausted, you probably say, hey, it's good. I'll take a nap. Or if you're ready for death, yes, it feels so peaceful here. But when somebody's full of life, well, who wants to sit here? I want to get out of here or put a window in. Or
right.
My father-in-law always felt that way. I'd say, you're in a white room. See, I didn't tell him what the symbolism was about, but he'd always say, oh, it's boring. I don't like it in here.
Mm-hmm.
And I knew he still had that life energy in him. And when you're safe with your family, you can talk like that.
Yeah.
But again, to get back to assisted suicide, yes, we should allow people to die when they want to. But see, the thing I worry about, there are a lot of doctors who can use assisted suicide to keep their power. They, I can't save your life, but I can kill you.
Mm.
You know, well, and Kevorkian, you see, not just Kevorkian, but all of us, if we had psychotherapy in medical school, and I mean that in a healthy way, why are you a doctor? How are you going to deal with loss? How are you going to deal with complications and death and so forth? See, I always say Kevorkian could have ended up running a hospice instead of killing people.
Mm.
And he wouldn't have ended up in jail, and a lot of people would have been grateful for all that he did. But his interests in medical school were in pathology. He never practiced medicine. He was a pathologist, which, again, dead tissues. So he had an issue, and if somebody had understood it and recognized it, he could have been a lot healthier and enjoyed his life a lot more than what he went through.
Good point.
But as I say, as physicians, you see, if I can't save you, oh, good, yeah, let me kill you. See, then I've done something. But if you help people to live, and what I've learned is there are a lot of people who were ready to die who didn't die when they started living. In other words, when they saw the limited time and accepted it and then went home and enjoyed life, you know, I'm always laughing because, you know, I didn't get invited to funeral. And when I would call up, the person I thought, you know, who was dead answered the phone. And because what they started doing was living, and added to their life. In some, literally, the disease disappeared. In others, instead of dying in 2 months, they lived 5 years. But they added to their life.
Right. They were resonating in gratitude and joy, which naturally creates life.
Like, you know, that young woman up in Oregon. I had a woman who went home to die also. You know, there was nobody to interfere with her doing it, you see. So, okay, I'll go home to die. She came back, I don't know whether it was a few weeks or 2 months later, and one of my partners was examining her. He said, "Hey, Bernie, come in here. You're interested in this stuff." So I go walking in, and I said, "What is it?" He said, "Her tumor's gone." I said to her, "Tell them what you did." She said, "Ah, you know." I said, "I know, but tell them." She said, "Well, I went home, and I left my troubles to God."
Mm-hmm.
And her cancer disappeared. Now, that's what I would have said to the young woman in Oregon. First, why don't you give faith a chance? See what your potential is, what might happen if you just had the faith and believed. Because, again, when you, "I'm going to die, I know I'm going to die," yeah, then your body gets a very different message, and it works hard at helping you to die. I was just reading this sentence from Khalil Gibran. "People who stand with their backs to the sun, and what is the sun to them but the cause of shadows?" Mm. And Helen Keller used to say the same thing the other way. She said, "If you face the sun, you never see the shadows."
Mm.
So again, it's what people see in it.
Right. I love that. Well, we're coming up on a break, and everyone, I'd like to share. You can connect with Dr. Bernie. You just go on his site, Bernie Siegel, SIEGELMD.com, all one word, BernieSiegelMD.com. And you can connect with him, ask him questions, whatever you would like. And then if you'd also like to save monies on his books and items, you can go on wisdomoftheages.biz. It is Jane and Keith Siegel, his son and daughter-in-law's store. And remember, it's .biz, B-I-Z. Once you order your items, anything about Bernie, put in code 27 in the comment box, and you'll save 15% automatically on all Bernie's items. Also, if you'd like to learn more about Lionel Ketchian, our co-host, go to his site, happinessclub.com. If you want to be uplifted, if you want to learn more about how to be happy every day, that will answer you, happinessclub.com. So we'll be back in a moment, everyone.
Dr. Bernie Siegel's writings and the 12 books he's published so far reflect his passion to reach people struggling with all of life's challenges. His latest, A Book of Miracles, inspiring true stories of healing, gratitude, and love, is both riveting and belief-expanding. Bernie has produced wonderful resources for everyone, like 365 Prescriptions for the Soul, daily messages of inspiration, hope, and love, and Faith, Hope, and Healing. Bernie's books also include those like Love, Magic, and Mud Pies, a great resource for parents, and delightful, loving stories like Buddy's Candle to help children of all ages cope with the loss of a loved one, be it a pet or a parent. To purchase Bernie's books, CDs, or DVDs, go to BernieSiegelMD.com. And while you're there, empower the mind, body, and spirit with Bernie's heartwarming articles.
Join Dr. Bernie Siegel on Mind Health Matters every first Sunday at 8 p.m., all part of the Dream Vision 7 radio network. Bernie will draw from his inspirational personal journey, offering us special nuggets of his sacred wisdom. Listen in as Bernie reminds us to be fully engaged in life.
Join the Mind Health Coach with Leah Marie every fourth Sunday at 8 p.m. Eastern Time. Come explore with us natural and healthy ways to achieve inner peace, happiness, and an ever-present state of well-being. You're already healed. You just haven't realized it yet. When you're ready, you can change your mind and change your life forever. The power of a beautiful life is within you today. Mind Health Coach with Leah Marie is part of the Dream Vision 7 radio network.
Join us every first Sunday of the month at 7 p.m. for Heart Living with Dr. Cynthia Bischoff, where you'll discover life wisdom and achieve greater spiritual awareness. Through Cynthia's coaching tips, healing stories, and inspirational interviews, you'll improve your relationships, find greater balance, and achieve inner peace today. Join thousands who've transformed their lives through Heart Living. This program is part of the Dream Vision 7 Radio Network.
Join us every second Sunday at 7 p.m. for Living on Purpose with Carolyn Romano, where we explore the mysteries, meaning, and sometimes madness of life. Let's figure out together the ways we're meant to serve and become the fullest expressions of our most authentic selves. Let's figure out together how to create lives of balance, abundance, and joy. This program is part of the Dream Vision 7 Radio Network.
Life. We can either be bystanders or creators. Now is the time to awaken to your divine identity and the power of the I Am within to create a joyous and fulfilled life, no matter what your circumstances are. There are answers to life's big questions, and there is a spiritual path that leads to soul liberation and ascension. Join us every third Sunday of the month at 6 p.m. Eastern Time for Prophets for the New Age with Carl and Nancy Showalter on Dream Vision 7 Radio Network.
Join us every fourth Sunday at 7 p.m. Eastern for the Jen Royster Show with your host, Dr. Jen, on a spiritual journey inward where hope and love bring healing to life's greatest challenges. Enjoy metaphysical topics, intuitive angel reads, guided healing meditations, and inspirational interviews. This program is part of the Dream Vision 7 Radio Network.
And we are back. And this weekend, I'd like to mention that the Natural Living Expo at the Royal Plaza Trade Center in Marlboro is going on. And on the 16th, our dear Dr. Bernie will be speaking in the afternoon. So you can learn more about that just by going online. And we're back with Dr. Bernie, and we're a radioactive family. We all feel as though we're related. And in essence, we are all one. From a humanity perspective, where collective consciousness. So let's bring Lionel in. You wanted to share something and ask
yes.
Bernie his perspective.
Yes, thanks, Deborah. Yeah, Bernie knows the person I'm referring to very well. He had he had cancer, a form of brain cancer. He knew him well. I knew him very well, and he. Actually was having difficulty with the prognosis of his situation because he didn't want to be a burden on his family. And for that reason, he was very, very serious about the consideration of taking his life. And, you know, we had talked, and I said, you know, in his case, because he's basically a doctor, I said, you could always do it. You know, if you're going to take your life, why do it now? Why not wait? If it happens at the time, I'm sure you've got the ways and the means to do it. And he said, yeah, I think that's true. So he waited. He held off with that inevitable, decision to kill himself. And the phenomenal thing with this individual that opened my eyes to it was the depth of his humanity was incredible. He was actually extremely happy right up until, I would say, the day he died, from what I've, gotten information back. I found that incredible that he shared with me that he's dying, he's getting worse, but he was never happier. And, a lot of people will think this is some sort of a fairy tale, but I experienced it, and I've got to say that, when Bernie is your group leader, it certainly doesn't hurt to have somebody like that on your team. So, Bernie, I know you know who I'm speaking about.
Yeah.
I just thought it was an incredible story.
Well, you know, one of the things I've realized, because we've always had a house full of animals, and Well, a lot of things have happened. I mean, there are times where veterinarians have come to the house and help us, you know, I don't use that term, put them to sleep, but, you know, euthanize them because they were so disabled. And I have found that the veterinarians are more comfortable with death because they are ending the life of lots of creatures. And I often have read a card that I received from one of the veterinarians, you know, saying we're sorry about your loss and, you know, a compassionate letter. And I say to people, okay, who did this come from, a veterinarian or a doctor, you know? And everybody in the audience votes for the veterinarian. My mother was an exceptional woman. I mean, she lived my sermon, and she transformed her doctors. And when she died, literally five doctors got in touch with me to talk about what a wonderful woman she was. Matter of fact, what was funny, I mean, just the way she lived, she had leukemia too. And one day she said to me, oh, I have to go get a blood count. I said, what do you need a blood count for? And she looked at me like, don't you remember? I have leukemia. But she never lived the disease, you know? Yeah. I mean, her mind was on life and living. And that was a part that, I have to say, impressed me. And her doctors got the message, too, and then were comfortable sharing feelings and getting in touch with me. But I have to, let me turn the coin over, too, because one of our dogs had a malignant melanoma, and I took him to the vet who said, I've never seen a dog this sick recover, so I think we really ought to euthanize him while you're here. And I said, can't do it without telling the kids. So I called home, and I said, we're putting Oscar to sleep. And the kids answered, they're always teaching me, no, you're not. I said, what are you talking about? You don't put your patients to sleep, you're not putting Oscar to sleep. So I picked him up and brought him home. And I mean, here's a dog who can't even stand up. I mean, he's lying on the floor. But I'm feeding him with a spoon. I'd give him some of my vitamins. But I spend a lot of time loving him, massaging and petting and sitting. And literally, within a couple of weeks, he was on his feet, walking around. And then I thought, we might as well let him outside with the other dogs. And, you know, I'd take him outside. And he ended up living 3 years with no sign of cancer.
What a story.
And I always remember the vet. Every time he'd meet me, he'd say, I can't believe it. I've never seen a dog that sick ever recover. But I've learned, too, that, well, there are books written now about the energy cure. But, you know, when you're giving that love, that energy, it also affects the sick person. As a matter of fact, in the Jewish religion, I remember reading, it said everybody who visits a sick person takes away a percentage of their illness.
Wow.
So you can't cure them. It's like if each one of us took away 1%. With, you know, you can't cure the person, but you're always making the disease a little less and helping them.
Yes.
And we know that. Again, relationships, all these things play a part in our survival. And let me add one more relationship that's probably important, because I was just glancing. I keep reading and rereading books. It's called Who Needs God by Harold Kushner. And towards the end, I've worked so hard that, you know, things I've worked so hard for, that is what I need, God. I need to know that you are with me in the valley of the shadow, you know, the valley of the shadow of death. And that when we, you know, feel that presence, like the woman who went home with that kind of faith in God, I mean, what peace it brings to you. And to me, I wish it was that easy to do. You know, I always say, but where's God, you know, when the car won't start and the pipes are leaking and your furnace blows up? But when you have that kind of faith, what a change it makes in your life.
Faith is a big part of this, and it doesn't have to be religious faith either. It could be that faith could be that you could choose to deal with what's happening and find a way that will work for you, you know, whether it's spiritual or something, or maybe family, or just plain love from a member.
But faith, trust that all will be well.
Yeah, what your definition is. I mean, to me, I always say our Creator loves us because look at all the things that are built into us that do help us survive. And I always say, if you cut your finger, you don't bleed to death, you know?
Right.
And
it's interesting you talk about cutting your finger because I a very slight cut. I was cutting something for my wife, and then I ended up, getting the knife into my. It was very, very, really tiny little spot. But you know, I thought about how the body heals, and it's pretty incredible. And we can't do it consciously, but what I thought about is the wound heals. But the important thing for us as individuals to help the healing process is not to interfere with it. In other words, not to keep constantly picking at it or hitting it. And if you just leave it alone, let it recuperate, it amazingly and very quickly goes right back to normal, providing you don't do the things you shouldn't be doing. And I think when you think about dealing with life, I think it's the same thing. I think life can heal us if we don't keep picking at the wound or, stirring it around and around in our thoughts, because I think that's the kind of thing that ultimately stirs up the wound and doesn't allow it to heal.
Yeah.
Right.
This is another little paragraph from that book. God is found in our insistence on finding our way through the valley of the shadow. Knowing that there is evil in the world, knowing that some of the time the evil may overpower us, yet fearing no evil, for thou art with me. And again, it could be each person's definition of God, if you will, so that we don't start arguing based on religions. But to just have that sense, well, that's why I use the word potential. And a wonderful quote I love from Ernest Holmes, Science of Mind. What if Jesus was the only normal person who ever lived? You know, I mean, I know he had to be smiling when he wrote that sentence. But
yeah, that's funny.
If you think about it that way, you think, gee, then, you know, it's possible. See,
what's wrong with you? Why can't you walk on water? There must be something wrong with a lot of people then, what he
maybe you just don't have enough faith, you know?
Yeah, you know, you've been referring to walking through the valley of the shadow of death.
Shadow of death.
And
yeah.
I think that's a very interesting quote because it says, as I walk through the valley, it doesn't say you made camp there and you stayed there.
Right.
God will help you if you keep on going. That's what I think that part of that message is.
Well, there's a song, I think it is, that when you're going through hell, keep on going. The devil learns you there, you know?
Exactly. But you don't want to stop. Stopping is almost like giving up, and that's where the faith part comes in. Sometimes you don't know the answer, but with faith, you could be creating the answer by going in the right direction.
Yeah, what I say to a lot of people, you know, how does a curse become a blessing? I mean, whether it's death, cancer, losing, you know, your house burns down. But there are a lot of people who say it became a blessing. And the way Joseph Campbell put it was, when you're going through hell, ask yourself, what am I to learn from this?
Yes.
So there are people who are capable of stopping and learning from a disaster. And
absolutely
are enlightened by it and realize what is important about life and, you know, not just accumulating material things, but all the things that we are doing. As I say, the immortality comes from what we do for others, not what we accumulate.
Right.
And with that said, we need to take our next break. And I believe that the power that we have within, that spirit, will take us wherever we want to go. As you said, you walk through, and you can walk through to the other side and then see the gifts that you've, you know, gathered up during that dark time. And so it is. We'll be back.
Dr. Bernie Siegel's writings and the 12 books he's published so far reflect his passion to reach people struggling with all of life's challenges. His latest, A Book of Miracles, inspiring true stories of healing, gratitude, and love, is both riveting and belief-expanding. Bernie has produced wonderful resources for everyone, like 365 Prescriptions for the Soul, daily messages of inspiration, hope, and love, and Faith, Hope, and Healing. Bernie's books also include those like Love, Magic, and Mud Pies, a great resource for parents, and delightful, loving stories like Buddy's Candle to help children of all ages cope with the loss of a loved one, be it a pet or a parent. To purchase Bernie's books, CDs, or DVDs, go to BernieSiegelMD.com. And while you're there, empower the mind, body, and spirit with Bernie's heartwarming articles.
Join Dr. Bernie Siegel on Mind Health Matters every first Sunday at 8 p.m., all part of the Dream Vision 7 radio network. Bernie will draw from his inspirational personal journey, offering us special nuggets of his sacred wisdom. Listen in as Bernie reminds us to be fully engaged in life.
Take a journey to a place of the divine love within with Deborah Bovee on the Love by Intuition show, Saturdays 2 to 3 p.m., Our message is love in the purest form. The light within us all is a guide to recall our beginning, to learn to love self and humankind, to feel the higher power of our own divinity. To attract love, one needs to be love. Saturday, 2 to 3 p.m., all part of the Dream Vision 7 radio network.
Tune in every first Sunday at 6 p.m. for maximum success. The Coach Brew Show. You'll learn success strategies to take your game to the next level from performance consultant John Brubaker. Maximum Success explores why winners win and teaches you the keys to peak performance. This program is part of the Dream Vision 7 radio network.
Join us on Creating a Spirited Life with Janet Kesenick the third Sunday of every month at 8 p.m. We'll explore the day-to-day moments that puzzle, enlighten, and bring us into deeper connection with our best selves. Find meaning, purpose, and humor while creating a spirited life. This program is part of the Dream Vision 7 radio network.
The Dream Vision 7 Radio Network presents Kids for Love. Join Deborah Bovee and her young co-hosts and celebrate kids making a difference. We invite other kids to join in for spirited conversation filled with creative ideas and possibilities to start your own mission. Let's raise the bar together and cultivate a kinder world by getting inspired to help others in need. Kids for Love Project, celebrating kids that empower others. Callers into the show are in a drawing. It's every first Saturday at 2 p.m.
And we are back with Mind Health Matters and the Dr. Bernie Siegel, Lyle Ketchian, and Deborah Bovee. So we were talking about choices. I have to bring that up because we're choosing, people choosing when they're addicted to alcohol or drugs. I truly believe, because I've seen it, I've experienced it myself, that there comes a time when you can choose to live. You can choose to turn your life around. And no one can do that for you but yourself.
Right. And that term is very important. I place before you life and death. Good and evil, choose life. And my definition of that is, because actually in one of our books, A Book of Miracles, I found that people had these incredible, you know, miraculous coincidences when they chose life. And my definition of it was when they chose what was life-enhancing, not just for themselves, but for everyone.
Right.
When they had other people in mind, then they made choices. And those choices literally, in some cases, save their lives or fix their cars or whatever.
Right.
I mean, these are not just about life and death issues, but just wonderful things happen.
And if I could add, knowing, one has to get to the core of why one is drinking or when one is drugging. And when you get to the core and release that, and it's a journey, then you are able to move forward.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And don't forget the word journey. A friend in hospice started giving me that as his name, as my name. Mm-hmm. He stopped calling me Bernie and started calling me Journey. And boy, that was therapeutic, you know, but that's what life is about.
Yes.
I've got to read you two more poems, then I promise I'll behave. One is called Eternity, because how do we live? I'm asked to be prepared for eternity. How do I prepare? Where will I spend it? Find questions for philosophers. I don't have that problem. Eternity troubles me not at all. I am having trouble with today. If I can master today, eternity will take care of itself. Eternity, from what I know of it, can't be as much trouble as today. When eternity comes, I'll take it one day at a time. And I think that's you know, what we all need to learn.
Yeah.
And I got to read you this one because, you know, when you talk about walking through the valley of the shadow of death, see, I have a different version of the Bible. It's called Bible 2. And here's what it says. The Lord is my persecutor. I have many needs. He maketh me to lie down on beds of nails. He leadeth me into the stormy sea. He troubles my soul. He misleadeth me into the paths of unrighteousness for no reason. Yea, when I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I have plenty to worry about and fear. For thou art on vacation. Thy rod and thy staff I keep tripping over. Thou preparest a table with no utensils in the presence of mine enemies. Thou messest up my hair. My cup runneth over and spills a hot drink into my lap. Surely misery and punishment will follow me all the days of my life, and I shall dwell in the basement of the Lord's house forever. I don't know what I was going through the day I wrote that.
That's what I was thinking.
In a good day.
Wow. Well, it's funny. It's funny. I'll give you that.
But, you know, the fact that you get it out helps, if you know what I mean.
Sure.
That you're not storing all this stuff. Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. You know, you brought up twice the idea of being involved in something bigger than yourself, or at least you were leaning in that direction in the two references I was thinking of during this show. And when I think of alcoholics or drug addicts or people who are addicted, you know, they're so wrapped up in themselves that actually one of their biggest problems, or even a depressed person, for example, they're so wrapped up in themselves that they actually are missing out on being a part of something bigger than themselves, which is probably the reason that they need to drink or be depressed, or, you know. And so when you find being a part of something bigger than yourself, that is the greatest thing in the world. And it's not about money, and it's not about a lot of things, but it really is about becoming much more than we can ever understand. And only through that experience could we ever understand this.
Yeah, I have always felt that the addictions to anything are a search for love. You know what I mean? A search for the feeling that love gives you, and you can't find it in a natural way, so you turn to all these other things. I just found another thing I wrote called Suicide, what we started talking about. Why think it? Why bother with life? What's the point? It is so easy to stop living. Why take the easy way out? Chicken, take the challenge, take the pain, live, have surgery without anesthesia, then life seems easy. Yeah. Mm. And it takes a hell of a lot of courage. Well, that William James wrote that, you know, because years ago I was at a weekend, you know, retreat with all the famous self-help gurus who were all lecturing, and we had lunch together, and I couldn't believe what they were saying. They were all talking to each other about when they were suicidal, and I said, excuse me, you know, it's like, how can you get on the stage if you're talking like this? How can you preach? You're not living the truth. And I said, I've never been suicidal. And they said to me, we know, you're not normal. And, you know, everybody laughed. But I didn't understand them, what they were trying to tell me, until I read William James, who basically said, when you turn from suicide, from the end of your life, it's like you walk up to the edge of a cliff, see? And then you decide, no, I'm going to turn around and go back and choose life. And I realized that's what they were trying to tell me. All these self-help gurus, that what they were teaching people was to have the courage to turn and to choose life and not step off the cliff.
Right. And when you surrender everything, your soul, your body, your home, and everything, that's when you receive the miracle and the lessons that can take you to the next step.
Yeah, that word is so powerful, surrender.
It is. It is.
Yeah, it's amazing.
Bernie, I'd like to ask you,
you've had patients that have become brain dead. What have you learned from them?
Well, I think what I know is, because I learned it from the operating room, people are anesthetized, and I would keep talking to them. And the anesthesiologist would say to me, is something wrong? Am I have not enough anesthesia for you? I said, no. Then why are you talking to the patient? Because I know they hear me. And they used to think I was nuts. But until patients woke up and talked about what was said in the operating room. And then everything began to change. So people hear you asleep. Obviously, alarm goes off. You wake up under anesthesia, in coma. You still hear. That's what we have to learn. So I never stop talking to the patients, no matter what their state of health is. And you can see a response. I mean, I remember one minister, this woman was basically brain dead. I mean, she was, you know, critically ill, intensive care unit. He went in to visit her, and she's totally unresponsive. And he said, you know, Margaret, what are we going to do without you? You're the one who does all the cooking, you know, for our Easter party and all those special little goodies you make. I mean, all the children love it. If you're not there, what are we going to do? And the lady woke up and responded to him.
Yeah.
And then today I was reading something on the computer. You know, the guy's critically ill in the hospital, not responding. The family is allowed to bring the dog in to say goodbye to him. And guess what?
Mm.
He woke up when the dog was brought in. Mm. I always say people's coma gets deeper when the family comes in and they wake up when they're
Well, you know, lately there's a lot of work, and we all hear about it now. They encourage families to talk to patients in a coma, and that's one of the ways they find their way out. And it works quite often, which is amazing. And years ago, we never thought to do that.
I know. That's why I was considered a real, you know, nutcase in the operating room, because I played music and I talked to the patients. And now we have studies that show the benefits in the sense of fewer drugs needed, operation finishes sooner, patient has less pain if you talk to them in the right way and play the right music. By that I mean, you're not saying, oh my God, I've never seen anything this bad in all my years of surgery. No, that's not what you say to them. You know, you tell them you're taking care of it. You ask them to help you not bleed. You know, so it's a team effort. It's not cursing and yelling and this is the worst thing I've ever seen. That helps them
Bernie,
up.
You know, Bernie, you give nuts a good name, because if you want to be referred to as nuts, nuts are good for you, and you prove that.
Yes. Well, we only have a minute left. What would you like to leave the listeners with?
Well, I always say, because I talk so much when I'm being interviewed, Bernie, we're running out of time. And I say, we're all going to run out of time. So enjoy your lifetime. You know, we're all going to have a minute left someday.
Yeah.
Lionel?
Yeah. Well, you know, and for that reason, I think if you enjoy this minute, this second, you've really captured the essence of living, because it's right now. This is it.
That's right. Now is the time. Now is the moment. Well, for everyone out there, we trust that you've enjoyed our conversation. Until the next time, bye for now.
Join us next time on Mind Health Matters with Dr. Bernie Siegel. Until then, remember, be fully engaged in life, loving every moment as your unique self. In going deep within to discover ourselves, we can also discover self-love. Then, when we let our hearts make up our minds, we connect what our bodies do so well to the power of love. We can boost our ability to grow and heal along with our self-esteem. The sense of empowerment that results from this mind-body connection is one related to self-induced healing. When you add spirit to that connection, making a mind-body-spirit connection, you nourish your soul. For more insight, go to BernieSiegelMD.com.